And then I discovered this book. So this is the famous book of Latin, how to say, natural approach book. So it's written in Latin and with pictures. So
Nice.
yeah, in a simple language. So I discovered it, and I discovered CI, comprehensive input, Stephen question with recommendation from my friend. So I started to read more researches on it.
Hello, Mikey.
Hi, Abro. Hi.
Well, nice to have you here. First of all, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for having me here.
And yeah, as usual, my first question is yes, I mean, it's not really a question. So tell us about your experience with languages, what your native language is, your earlier experiences learning languages, and anything you think is interesting.
So I grew up in Hong Kong. So my first language is Cantonese, and I learned Mandarin and English in school, like in traditional way, you know that. So then I took a private class, private French class. Then I went to Paris and did my study. And now I'm in Berlin. So when I was in Paris, I learned I started to learn German. Then I came to Berlin. Now I'm living in Berlin. I'm now in Berlin, and last year, for 1.5 year, I started to I took an intensive Latin class,
Latin.
Latin course, in the university, and half how was it? First half class course, I was doing Anki, and I was memorizing all the word with word list, because for those who don't know, Latin is teaching. Is taught in a quite traditional way. We translate some text, some short text, into German. So the goal is to translate perfectly. And then I discovered this book. So this is the famous book of Latin. How to say it? Natural approach book. So it's written in Latin and with pictures. So
Nice.
yeah, in a simple language. So I discovered it, and I discovered CI, comprehensive input, Stephen question with recommendation from my friend. So I started to read more researches on it, and I also started a reading group with friends, Latin reading group, this kind of greater readers in Latin.
Nice.
It's very impressive. So, and in the other side, as beside the reading group, sorry for my English, because I'm not that I don't have many chance to speak English.
No problem, no problem. The content is the most important thing.
And beside the reading group, I was doing an experiment with my friend. he invited me to do this. We tried do some kind of shadowing, echoing, Anki, bilingual translation, different learning methods that we can found on YouTube mainly with Asimil, and I do it in Japanese. So I try different methods, and it did give me how to say it, a feeling of achievement. I did it. I've done it today, each day. So like doing sport, like doing exercise. But after that, I discovered this too stressful for me, and it did, how to say it, it's difficult to say it. One method doesn't or did not work, but it only worked in comprehensible input when we acquire a language. So I stopped it, and I tried to read stories and listen to stories.
Yeah,
So
because
that's it.
it seems like the natural way to do it, and probably the one that you enjoy the most, right? Because you're
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I have the luxury to enjoy the process, and don't not having not having stress, not having social stress on me. I don't have to pass the exam. I
Correct.
don't have to immigrate in a Japanese community. I don't have this stress. So I can take my time and enjoy the process.
Awesome. So I have a lot of questions when it comes to your different experiences.
No.
So let's start from the beginning chronologically.
Okay.
So you
Okay.
you say you studied in you studied sorry English and Mandarin in a traditional way, right?
Yes.
So
Yes.
that was this, okay. And how was your experience with it? Like when it comes to English, for example, how long did you study English in that way? What were the results?
I started English in kindergarten from at 3.
Nice.
It's quite common to it's quite common in Hong Kong, because Hong Kong was a British colony before 97. So I started English at 3, then until university, until to high school. So I was like, I didn't like it. I didn't like the class. I didn't like the work. I was good to I was good at doing homework, maybe, to get the check
Yeah,
to finish the homework. But
but it
you can, I mean, you can, or you can hear it. My English is not quite communicative. Or I can read. I can enjoy maybe a great reader, but it's far from perfect, or far from the
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Like you could do your homework, but that didn't mean anything when it comes to actually being able to speak the language. It's the same experience I had with English. I've talked about it several times that actually I think I started at 5, 6 years old. I mean, like the first thing, like you said, kindergarten, so like 2, 3 years later in my case. But again, all the way through primary school, high school, and so on. And same thing, like I didn't enjoy the process at all. I got passing grades, but It meant nothing. Yeah,
sure.
again, and yeah, it wasn't until later that I started. I've talked about it, watching the NBA and watching, reading, doing things in like natural things in English, actually getting exposed to the language.
Yeah,
that my knowledge actually skyrocketed, and I was able to communicate finally. Right?
Okay, that's great.
So after that period, 15 years, maybe, right?
Yeah.
What's been your contact with English? Have you had any experiences with it? Do you use English in Germany now, or have you been watching?
Nowadays, I read mostly. I read a lot English. A lot. I cannot hear relatively. I don't listen too much, but I read I don't know, news,
yeah, whatever you're
papers,
interested in,
books,
right?
So and I watch some movies, some series, but I'm not that interested in being someone speaking some kind of English, you
Okay.
know. I how to say it, how to put it. I for example, I did not meet fans with whom I need to communicate in English.
Okay.
So this mean that that means I don't have to. I don't have to speak the language. I don't have to listen a lot to the language or communicate in a oral way.
Yeah, I understand. Like you use German in Berlin now. You used French when you were in Paris, right? So you've never been in an environment in which you needed to communicate in English, right?
Yeah, right.
Oh, cool. And well, we'll go back to Mandarin later because, you know, but Mandarin and Cantonese. But then before you went to Paris, you said you took a course in French, right?
Yeah.
And what type of course was that? And how long did it last? And how, well, yeah, go with that.
It was maybe 1 year, I
okay.
think. Is like a traditional course.
Okay.
On first lesson, we learned the alphabet,
classic,
pronunciation rules. Yeah, so this a traditional way. Yeah. And then it lasts for 1 year. Then I went to, before I went to Paris, I went to Poitiers, another city in France, to learn a year French.
Okay. And
So, yeah.
And when you first got to France, to Poitiers, like you said, what was your experience with it? Like after a year of traditional classes, could you communicate in French?
No. I can't speak a word. I can't not understand what people saying.
Right.
I can't not speaking, and I no.
Yeah, right. And that year you spent in Poitiers, what type of classes do you have? Do you have like traditional classes again, or do you live with a family, or?
I took a course in a language school. It was a intensive course. That
Okay.
mean Monday to 5 day and 4 hours per day, maybe.
Nice. That's intensive, yeah.
So it's quite traditional, but you know, in a traditional class, we can also get a compensatory input.
Right.
So And I worked so damn hard that time because I need to pass the exam.
Oh.
So yeah. But it's so difficult to distinguish how many input or to measure how many comprehensible
Yeah,
input
I know. Yeah.
we get in a traditional class.
Yeah,
And
I'm guessing the
yeah.
experience was already better because probably the teachers were native speakers of the language. In
Yeah, yes, it's yes.
Right. So I mean, but yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
I mean this the okay. Someone who is native speaker doesn't mean that he or she can provide
Oh,
comprehensive
absolutely,
input.
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But what I mean is, if you compare both experiences, they're both traditional. But one, in your experience in Hong Kong prior to going to France, was with a non-native speaker, French, and then in France it was a native speaker. Yeah, obviously, like you said, I completely agree. Being a native speaker doesn't mean you're actually a good teacher, right? But in all those hours, even if it was traditional, like you said, you're getting comprehensible input here and there. And at least you're getting it from a native speaker. So you're learning the language the way it's used in real life, or it's not ideal because it was the taught the traditional way, but
I think that the in France I can get more input. It's just obvious that I could hear more French
right.
here, or I had more chance to get comprehensive input than in Hong Kong. But I just want to point out that a native speaker doesn't mean he or she or the language that he or she's speaking help is more helpful for a language learner.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I completely agree. But yeah, like you said, in your experience in France, the difference is outside of the class you were listening to French in real life. And did you feel a huge difference from the day you went to Poitiers for first, and then a year after that when you went to Paris?
Do you? I
Did
don't understand the question.
Oh, like did your French really improve? Like, did you feel the difference? Because you said that the first day you went to Poitiers, to France, you couldn't communicate, you couldn't understand. But then a year later, you said you spent 1 year in Poitiers, right? A year later, you went to Paris, and
Sure. I can communicate. I've improved quite a lot
okay.
in Poitiers because of the environment and the class and the students and classmates and teachers and people. I mean, it's all that.
So you were hanging out with a lot of French people as well there.
Not really. A little bit, but mostly I hang out with classmates that are strangers that are learning
Right.
French with me. So,
Okay. So non-native speakers who were also learning French, so you communicated in French. Okay. Understood. And how long did you stay in Paris after that?
In Paris, I stayed 5 years.
5 years. Okay,
Five
nice.
years.
And did you take any other classes or not in French?
No. I did the studies. I study in Paris, so that's in French. So
Well, like your college studies in at the university in France, sorry, in Paris.
in university.
Okay, awesome. So I'm guessing after those 5 years, you did then feel like a huge difference, right? Because then
Yeah, sure.
there was
Sure.
5 years of getting exposed to the language on a daily basis, right?
Yeah, sure. Yes, quite a difference. And yeah.
And when it comes to German, I think you said once again before going to Berlin, you took some grammar, some German class, right?
German class, but also grammar class.
Okay, German. Okay.
Yeah, and I learned German. I took a German class in the university, and it was a traditional way to learn German. I mean the teaching approach was quite traditional. I mean.
I mean the differences, but we understand, like grammar based and
Grammar
conscious
based,
study, and yeah. And
and then I went to Göttingen for 3 months in a some for a summer school, some course. So it was an intensive course,
Okay.
like the course in Poitiers.
Yeah.
Was Monday, Friday, and 4 or 5 hours per day, and it was nice. It was great, a great experience. I could hang out with classmates, and yeah.
Yes, it was a similar experience, right? You took a class, you took a course first, then you went to the country, this time for 3 months to get an
Yeah.
intensive course there. But also you started to surround yourself with, I mean, the German culture, of course, because you were there, and with other students who were, again, I understand they were also non-native speakers learning German, right? Well, and then after those 3 months, you went to live in Berlin, or you came back to Paris, or?
I came back to Paris, and then after maybe 1 year or two, I came to Berlin.
Okay, so when you first got to Berlin, your experience with German was the first course at the university, which was a year long.
Yes.
Year long, okay. Then those 3 months in summer in a different German city. And any other contact with the language prior to going to Berlin?
Oh, this is difficult to. I think I listened to a podcast,
Okay.
but
Like every day,
that's
or
all.
just.
This podcast, Easy German. Famous
But did, I mean, yeah, like did you listen to it every day, or just every once in a while, or?
I don't remember. I don't
Okay.
remember. Maybe when I have time.
Okay. Yeah, just to get an idea of how much input you got before you went to Berlin. Because when you arrived in Berlin, you could already communicate in the language, right? Kind of. Or
Yeah.
how was it?
It was better than when I arrived in Poitiers in France. I could already communicate in German, I think. Yeah, it fared better, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, like it's still a lot of room
Feeling
for
this,
improvement, right? Yeah.
yeah.
Well, and how long have you been in Berlin now?
To 1 year and a half,
Oh, cool.
so
Awesome.
almost 2 years.
So I'm thinking if you, now that you know about comprehensible input and so on, if you were to repeat the same experience but with a different language, let's say, for example, you want to learn Spanish and go to Spain, for example, what would you do and how would you do it differently? Because I'm guessing now that you know about comprehensible input, you wouldn't want to study grammar before going to Spain, or what would be your approach?
I would read and I would listen a lot. I would listen to stories that I understand mostly over 95%, and I would make sure that I enjoy the process, and this for acquiring the language, you know, listen a lot of stories and enjoy the process and reading a lot at the same time. But if I have to deal with some social demands or social stress, I may take another approach, or I don't, I'm not quite sure. I'm still struggling or struggling thinking about it. So when someone come to me and saying, I don't know, I want to learn French, and but I have to pass the exam, what should I do with the student, or what should I give him tips, or so yeah. But mainly for language acquisition is story listening and reading.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, if someone wants to pass an exam, I mean, you can. I've already talked about my opinion when it comes to language exams, but what I mean is, yeah, I mean, they can study for the exam, so they pass it, but like, you know, it doesn't mean you're actually acquiring the language, right? But yeah, but
Yeah, but I want to, I just want to point out that I think this most, maybe not most, but some people will be concerned by the exam or by the language exam when they heard, oh, what do we have to do is just listening stories and reading, you know. Sometimes we cannot wait for the acquisition. Sometimes I just want to,
Yeah, because you need it short term, and you can hack the process short term by memorizing things, but yeah. Absolutely. Oh, cool, interesting. And yeah, I'm thinking it's interesting that it was Latin, the language that actually got you into comprehensible input and so on, because I actually know that book, because and it's really awesome, because it's like from the very beginning. Obviously, I think it was easier to understand for me because of Spanish being my native
Spanish,
language and because I speak Italian as well. But I thought it was really interesting, like you said, because it's comprehensible because of the pictures, how simple it is at the beginning, but he keeps building on it, so it gets.
it's quite good. It's comprehensible. But the maybe one of the weakness of this book, or with one kind of comprehensible input, is that some people would find it repeating or
Right.
boring. Some people will be,
Yeah, because yeah, right. But yeah, the thing with Latin is nobody, I mean nobody. I don't know if anyone speaks Latin in real life, right? So it's hard to find resources. And if I'm not mistaken, the book starts like, this is a family in Italy. This is the dad, this is the mom. So it's, yeah, like super simple. Probably not the most interesting novel you're going to read.
Yeah,
But yeah, to give you an
Yeah,
idea, it's really good in that sense.
in this end, it's really good. But for some people, maybe the fan who asked me to do the experiment, he would find those books quite boring with all those repetition and
Like it's technically correct, but
It's not
you have to make it interesting.
yeah, it's not optimal.
Exactly.
Yes.
Nice. And you mentioned the book club. So how are you doing that with your friends who are also learning Latin? Are you picking a book, then reading it and talking about it, or how's that book?
The reading group.
The reading group, yeah, sorry.
The reading group. We were trying. We did it once per week, and we did it for a semester, so 4 months, 3 4 months maybe, and we were doing the free voluntary reading, so we bought a lot of creator readers, and we did the free one to be reading. That mean we show all the readers on a table and each of us choose a book to read, and when we feel bored or when the book is too difficult, we drop the book and we choose another one. We did it for maybe for 15 minutes to 30 minutes in the beginning of our session, and then we go we read a chapter of the Familia Romana, the book, this book. So that's our how we do the reading group.
So it's like totally pleasure reading, right? Like you don't talk about the books afterwards. It's just everyone chooses a book, reads it, and
We discussed the books naturally, just like we watched a movie and we make some comments on it, and this one is nice, this one is not so interesting. That's all.
But yeah, awesome. But do you make those comments in Latin or German?
In German,
Okay. There's sort of a book club in your language, I mean in the language you use every day, being German, but you read books in Latin. Oh, interesting. Yeah, it's a good idea. It's a good idea. And there's a lot of graded readers in Latin.
A lot of, I think there are more than 100
No.
Twitter readers. Is not a lot,
I mean, for a
when
language like Latin, yeah.
we think of how many input we should get to acquire a language, is not a lot,
Understand, yeah.
but it's impressive.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, yeah. But yeah, I was expecting way less because it's just like a dead language, right? So, but it's really good.
No, but Latin community is doing a quite well job on CI,
Nice,
on
huh?
comprehensible input, and yeah, they are quite into it.
Awesome. Yeah, I haven't been into Latin when it comes to comprehensible input, so I didn't know. Nice. And is there anyone you know, or anyone, I'm just thinking about it, that you think would be interested in a podcast interview that you think I could reach out to?
I think
Any YouTube project or anything?
you might, this only my desire, or my how to say it, as a reader, I think this author is quite good,
Andrew Olympic.
Andrew Olympic,
Okay.
to write He wrote several great readers with pictures, and it's so interesting to read it.
Nice. And do you know if he's got a YouTube channel or anything, or just look it up online?
He has a website. I can send it to you.
Okay. Yeah, like send it to me later, and I'll leave it in the description if anyone wants to.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and I'll reach out to him.
I'd be grateful. Thank you.
Yeah, I just thought about it. Awesome. And so moving on from Latin, that was the language, like you said, that got you into comprehensible input, right? And when did you decide to start a channel to teach your native Cantonese?
That was I was doing two tandem, two language exchanges with my friends. They want to learn Cantonese,
mm-hmm.
and with one friend, I've been doing for 3 years.
Nice.
I think we met in Paris, and we keep on doing the tandem once a week. And we tried several things, the methods that I mentioned, shadowing, mm-hmm. echoing, blah, blah, blah. And I did a research on the resources online for Cantonese, but I couldn't find too much, a lot. So we tried serving. We take a video on YouTube in Cantonese, and I do the translation and I do the transcription, but it was too much workload for me. It was not sustainable.
Right.
And for her too, she needs to listen to the do the audio several times to understand, and it was quite frustrating and stressful.
Right. So
after several travel, I decided to make some videos for her, drawing stories and vlog, but all was private.
Okay.
But after several, maybe 1 or 2 months, we felt like comfortable. It was like so interesting and funny to make videos for her. So I decided to upload the videos on YouTube and create the channel.
Nice.
So all the videos of the intermediate level on my channel is for her.
Okay.
I speak to her.
Nice.
So
yeah, because I've seen some of the videos that I've seen that you have, like comic books. You also use video games.
Yeah, video games.
I've seen some stories, of course. Nice.
Yeah. So this is the intermediate level, and for the beginner level, this is for another fact.
Ah, nice.
So, thank them.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to do it. Yeah, it's interesting.
I might want to ask your experience when you create a video, how do you imagine which audience or which level, how do you adjust the language that you use in
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question, first of all. The thing with me, it's a little bit different because because of the similarities between English and Spanish, I know that by writing things down, and in general, it's more comprehensible, right? For because people who want to learn Spanish, in my case, they're either native English speakers or they're speakers of another language who already speak English. So, there are a lot of things that might not be comprehensible if it was a different language, but because Spanish and English, there's some similarities between them. I just write things down, so it's more comprehensible. I use a lot of pictures. So I try to do it for beginners, like with beginners in mind, because again, the experience is a bit different. Because in my head, someone who's on an intermediate level in Spanish can already understand resources that are meant for native speakers. Not maybe not series or things like that, but documentary,
Definitely.
Obviously, with Cantonese, if an American person, for example, is interested in Cantonese, if he or she is starting from scratch, nothing is going to be comprehensible, right? As opposed to Spanish. So for me, even for someone who has had no contact with Spanish, but if they speak English, I'm going to write things down. I'm going to use a lot of pictures, gestures, real life context. So it's going to be more comprehensible, right? But then a good idea, and it's pretty much what you're doing, is you can actually, instead of creating the videos, because when you create a video, you're all by yourself with the video games or the comic books. You don't have the live feedback from a student, right? So you need to guess, like you said. But when you're making videos for your friends, you can start teaching someone from scratch completely. So, in the video, you're adjusting to what your student needs, right? But if someone starts from scratch and watches the video on YouTube, it's going to be at the perfect level for that person because you're already adjusting according to your friend.
Yeah, I think this I don't know, maybe someone has better method, or I'm still trying it, but for me it's far more comfortable to make a video to someone that I know than a video to a public that I
I
know
know.
nothing.
Yeah.
I make a video, I a normal YouTube video to introduce 5 verbs in Cantonese, or I don't know what. That is not it's not comprehensible input, it's not compelling, it's not.
I understand. Yeah. Yeah, plus when you do it for your friend. Your friends, so you have stories in common. You have you know what your friend is interested in. You know what's going to work for her or him. So I'd say for you it's probably that idea is probably interesting. Like if you get, I mean, the friends you're already using for your videos, but for example, if you get a new friend who's starting from completely from scratch. If you just teach your friend and just record the sessions, I think that's going to be super interesting because naturally you're going to speak really slow. You're going to make it comprehensible through images, gestures, or whatever you need for that person to understand. But because you're preparing the lesson for your complete beginner friend, other complete beginners who are watching the video afterwards are gonna find it just as comprehensive and interesting as your friend. Maybe not all of them, but you know what I mean. Like, I'd say it's easier because, and you have the live feedback from someone. So if you're communicating in a certain way and your friend doesn't understand, he or she is gonna tell you. So you can adjust so he or she understands, and the person watching from home. It's gonna go through the same process as your friend, right? You have the live feedback from someone, and it's likely that two different people starting from scratch are going to have the same issues, right?
And I'm just I just have to make sure that my friend understands, and only one person understand my videos and find it useful. This more comfortable for me than making a videos to a big public
Yeah.
that.
So go ahead with that. I guess your friend's gonna be happy, right? Because you're
I hope
but oh
so.
no, wait, but I'm thinking, so are you making videos and then sending them to your friend, or are you interacting live?
The videos that for example, I tell storybooks and I just film it and tell the story by myself. I film the picture. And I borrowed the book from the library, and I upload the video on YouTube because my friends said that it doesn't matter. I sent her the videos before I sent her videos directly,
So
but now I just upload to YouTube.
you record the video alone and then send it to her or upload it to YouTube, right? So what I'm thinking is you can actually teach her online by like a real class.
I think I thought about it, but it's about the how to say it, the intimacy, because we have been doing tandem for 3 years and we start recording and we talk about our life, or we're just communicating. So I don't want to have a camera being there
No. I know. No, but I don't mean your normal conversations, but I don't know for that's the intermediate friend, right? Maybe not the intermediate, but the beginner one. I mean, when you meet online to talk about like a tandem style to talk about life, I don't know, just for 15, 20 minutes, you tell her or him a story in Cantonese in a comprehensible way. Because you know the little but important difference is that he or she is gonna tell you live, he's gonna give you feedback live. You know what I mean? So it's at this you're recording your videos at home by yourself. It would be like doing the same thing but with him or her in front of you, right? So that way you're gonna see if he or she understands or not. So you get the feedback in the moment, because when you upload it to YouTube, you're just guessing, right?
I think, yeah, I was guessing, but I will maybe because we do the tandem once per week, and I'm communicating with him in Cantonese, so I know how to adjust my language to him in my videos.
Perfect.
So there's not quite a problem, but thanks for the suggestion. I think there's I thought of it when I'm addressing to someone that I don't know. Maybe I thought I had an idea. Maybe we can make a live and we are addressing to the public and the public can react. So that there's more interesting or more comprehensible for them.
Right. Yeah, that's the whole idea. Yeah. Nice. And there's one topic that I'm super interested in and that I want to ask you about because of your native language, and that's characters. Like that's Mandarin or Cantonese or well, Japanese that you're studying now, right? Because I'll give you some co context. So I'm super interested because, so I'm used to learning European languages for the most part, which, you know, they have some differences, but it's the same alphabet. And a couple of years ago, I started learning Russian, which is, you know, which has a different alphabet, but it's still an alphabet. They're not characters like in Cantonese or Mandarin, right? And I learned to read in a pretty natural way, meaning I've talked about it, but there's a YouTube channel from a friend of mine called Comprehensible Russian, and she has videos even for complete beginners. And so in some of her videos, she had a map of Europe with the names of the countries in the Cyrillic alphabet, right? And you know, in a natural way, as she was talking about her story or whatever she was talking about, she mentioned the names and I could read them at the same time. So I started recognizing patterns. And that's how I learned to read. And so that's a little bit of the backstory. But whenever I think of, or whenever I talk to someone about Mandarin, Cantonese, Japanese, people always talk about memorizing characters or about, you know, about how to learn characters. And first of all, I'm interested in knowing, how did you learn the Cantonese characters as a kid?
As a kid, I learned it in school and in my family. I think mostly maybe in school, I start to learn the character, the writing the character, or reading the characters, maybe in school. I don't remember, but in school we did a lot of how is it? The copying characters. And learning how to the order, writing order the characters, and try to memorize the characters, many dictations, and yeah, I want to read more on it, on how people are acquiring character Chinese characters, but I didn't read much on this.
The reason I'm interested is because, well, many reasons, but the main reason is because I keep thinking that there must be a natural way to acquire it. Because, well, first of all, how many characters are there in Cantonese? Approximately.
I don't know. I don't.
But I mean, like thousands or
Yeah, sure.
a lot.
Thousand. Yeah, so a
Yeah,
lot. A lot. Yeah, sure.
you don't need to give me the exact number.
Okay.
Like a lot.
Thousand. A lot. Yeah.
Yeah, but whenever I talk to people about that, people who studied Mandarin or Cantonese or Japanese, people keep talking about maybe not purely memorizing them, but using techniques for remembering them, and yeah, like copying, like you said, things like that. And I keep thinking there must be a natural way to acquire it as well. Like, for example, if you're a teacher and you're creating a story with your students, I don't know, like three, four, five lessons later, when they already know the story, if you read the story aloud for them and have the characters at the same time, because they already understand the words, yeah, the sounds, right? If the story starts like, you know, once upon a time, you know, typical story. So if they can read the story as you tell it out loud, and they already know what it means because you've created the story before, in a natural way, their brain is going to associate those sounds with those characters, right? So you don't need, so it's the same idea as it comes to the language as a whole, right? Like if you want to learn certain words or phrases in a foreign language, it doesn't make sense to memorize them or try to, you know, think of a hack to so you remember them. You just need to listen to them in a natural way in context, and your brain will, I don't know, pick them up, if you will. I keep thinking that there must be a way to learn characters in that way without having to memorize or consciously remember them.
I'm for this hypothesis. I'm totally for a belief in maybe in this sect. I don't know, because in school we did many rewriting, copying, dictation, so we cannot say how much we learned from the dictations and how much we learned from reading and
it's fun.
But it's worth of experiment and research. But when I am learning Japanese, and I can feel that the acquisition of this character, this form, meaning, connection. Absolutely. Yeah, this happening. It's happening somewhere in my brain.
Right. Yeah, because I've had this feeling for a while, and then the other day I was in a live Q&A session, and one of the viewers talked about the fact that Japanese people, they as kids, they memorize characters, but then they forget a lot of them later on in life. So I was thinking, like, there must be a different way. Like, for example, because now for you, when it comes to your Cantonese, I mean, I'm guessing you can read anything, and I mean, can you recognize all the characters? Have you forgotten characters, or what's your relationship with characters? It's a tough question, but I'm just,
I think,
so like the, sorry, the last thing is, like, the reason I'm asking is because whenever I'm not sure about something, I tend to think the natural way is the better way. So I tend to look at the way native speakers learn or acquire the language, or in this case, the character. That's why I'm interested.
It's a very good question, and I think of maybe I will start with a poem that I read today in Chinese, and I didn't there was a character that I don't know, and I need to guess, and I cannot pronounce it because I don't know the character.
Interesting.
So but it is not quite I don't know, maybe when we read a literature or poems, there are relatively many or a few of characters that we cannot recognize, but when we read newspapers and when I read these papers, there's maybe, I can recognize maybe all the most of characters.
But does it stop you from understanding the meaning sometimes, or depending on the resource, if it's complicated or?
I think.
Or you can guess, like you said, or figure it out, or.
We can always guess when we don't recognize a character, and I think we can recognize a character without knowing the pronunciation, and we can knowing we can recognize the character and guess the signification, but not the pronunciation.
Okay.
We have maybe no clue. I'm not sure.
No problem. Yeah, because it is such an interesting topic for me, because Yeah, for example, if I'm reading something in Spanish in my native language, of course, depending on the research, there might be a word here and there that I don't understand. But I can perfectly read it. You know what I mean?
You can pronounce it. You
Yeah, I can
can.
pronounce it, I can read it, I can again, I can figure out what it means most of the times, but that's the same thing. But I don't know, I just find it fascinating, and it's a topic that I want to do more research on, because I just have the feeling that, you know, it can be about memorizing and things like that.
I think there is, I think that there's no, if we have to memorize all the characters,
It's crazy, right?
it's crazy.
There are like thousands of characters, right? I think when it comes to Japanese, the language you're learning now, there are like three different sets of characters, and one has like thousands of characters.
So,
Yeah. I'll keep doing more research on that. Yeah, I'm gonna try to talk to more people whose native language is, you know, a language with characters like yours or Japanese or things like that, because it's such an interesting topic to me because of that.
Yeah, send me when you have found something interesting or worth to read. We can share.
Sure. Because I've seen it in some of your videos, when you read the comic books, you have some characters there, right? I've seen that. So do you show the characters all the time as you're reading it, or just sometimes?
I don't pay attention to it.
Okay, you're just reading.
I just film the
Yeah.
comic, the manga that I, or the, how to say it, the place,
Yeah, the pages.
the case, the case that I need to film. So I don't pay attention to the character.
Right.
I just try, I try to tell an interesting story, and I don't know, because my friend, she learns Cantonese, but she did not learn how to read. He cannot read a book in Cantonese. Maybe in very, very easy language. But
Right. Yeah, like you're not trying to teach reading in your videos. It's just that some of the conversations in the books and so on have characters, have words, so you just read them and you can see them in your video, but that's not your idea, right?
yeah, that's not my idea.
Okay. Interesting, interesting. All right. So yeah, like finally, so you're learning Japanese now, you said, right? And
Yes.
so now you speak Cantonese, Mandarin, French, German, and English.
Yeah.
Is it? Cool. And any projects for the future? Any language that you'd like to learn? Latin. I forgot about Latin. Sorry.
That, I don't know. I think that for me, each language that I want to learn has is it a point or someone or something that makes me go. Makes me
Want to learn it,
want
right?
to learn the language or keep in contact with the language.
Right.
Like English, I have made a friend with whom that I have to speak English, so my English is my speaking English is broken, so
Yeah, anytime, anytime.
I have to, and first of all, I have to encounter someone or something in of the language. And for Japanese, I have manga, I want to watch films, and I want to learn about the culture.
Awesome. Yeah, there's some reason behind your learning, right? Some social connection with someone or some,
I'm
videos that
not.
you want to watch because you're especially interested in the culture, right? Things like that.
I think that is maybe one problem. I don't know one problem, but one observation that I do see in on YouTube that the polyglots like to say, I learned how many languages without mentioning the culture or the people, the themes, how amazing they are. So,
Like the social aspect or I agree, yeah. Like I've talked about it recently, for example, a couple of times. Like actually with German, when I started to learn German, I started to become more and more interested in the culture itself. I started to want to learn more about Germany, about the different regions, about their culture, their food, their history, and so on. And when that wasn't really, or that wasn't necessarily the case before I started with the language. So it's also a means or, a way to, well, of course, get to know the culture a little bit better, but to be more interested in the culture itself and to, yeah. It's an important part of it for me as well, yeah. Okay, so well, thank you so much.
Oh,
Thank
thank you. Thank you very much.
you. And of course, well, I'll leave your channel on the title with your name, but I'll leave it in the description as well.
Oh, thank you.
And as well as that man's website that you'll send me afterwards, yeah.
That's all.
Andrew something.
Andrew Olympic,
And yeah, thank you so much, Hanky. Monkey's
thank you for having me here and for the channel. I think it's super interesting and how to say it, helpful for language acquirers.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you, Monkey.
Thank
And
you.
yeah, keep going with your videos.
Thanks. Okay.
And yeah, thank
I
you.
hope you.
And have a good evening. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for watching this interview. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was helpful for you. And if you want to know more about language learning, language acquisition, like what's the best way to learn a language, ideas for language learning, the best resources at different levels. Here you can find the whole playlist with all the interviews I've done so far with different researchers, teachers, polyglots, and so on. And finally, right here, you smash this guy right in the face to subscribe to my channel. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye bye.